Om Gyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Shrishtam Manamapi Shachiputra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasyaga Jamurupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto yasya pratita kripaya shigurum tam natosmi. Vandeham shiguro shiatav parakamalam shigurun vaishnavamscha. Shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunatam vitam tam sajivam. Sadvaitam savad bhutam parajana sahitam krishna taitanya devam. Shri radha krishna padam. Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakham Vitamscha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vishnu Sahasranama, the thousand names of Vishnu. Now name 92. Only 1,000 minus 92 is 918 to go. After this, the name previous to this, name 91, is Aha, which means day, has other meanings also. And this name 92 is Samvatsaraha, which means year. So Krishna is the day, he is the year, he is time. From the smallest measurement of time, which in Vedic calculation is the amount of time that it takes one atom to move past another, up to the longest duration of time of any use considering, which is the extent, the time that the universe exists, that is Krishna. So year is I don't think you got it. No, there are other papers also. Okay, you got the wrong mountain. You have to go back and find the right mountain. So what is a year? A year in modern understanding is approximately the time that it takes what they say the earth to rotate the sun. There are different calculations of a year. And on different planets, what will be a day, what will be a year will be different. In the Chinese culture, they have the year of the rat, the year of the monkey, the year of the tiger. But in Vedic understanding, the year is Krishna. So every year is the year of Krishna. For those who forget Krishna, it's always a bad year. They say, is the upcoming year going to be good or bad? If you think of Krishna, it's good. If you don't think of Krishna, it's going to be bad. It's like people often ask me in India, well, in other places also, people ask me, can you read palms? So I said, show me your palm. I said, it looks very bad. Unless you chant Hare Krishna, it's all going to be very bad. I don't know anything about palm reading, but it's a fact. Unless you chant Hare Krishna, everything's going to be very bad. It's going to be birth, death, old age and disease, and all kinds of suffering. Another meaning of the name Samvatsara. If we look down and break it up, vasa, to live, then the term Samvatsara means the year in the sense that everyone lives within, not just within space, but within time also. We are all constrained to operate within time. No one can go outside time. People think that they want their freedom. But we are all constrained by time. We cannot operate outside of time. There is no possibility of that. He brought the mountain and the ocean and the everything else too. Oh, that looks like it. Yeah. So we people, they often think of freedom as the freedom to go here and go there, the freedom to move within space. But we're all constrained by time. We cannot go outside the constraints of time. So that is a representation of Krishna. We're all within the framework set up by Krishna. We cannot go outside that. Another meaning is given here. He rescues the devotee from the ocean of birth and death. Well, that's a very important understanding, isn't it? There are so many names of Vishnu which is given. Time is that which binds us within this world, but Krishna, who is time, lifts up his devotees and takes them beyond birth and death. Next name, name 93, is Vyala. The general meaning of which is something which is very unpleasant, vicious, like a snake or a dangerous elephant. So you may think, well, that's a strange name for Vishnu, something undesirable. Well, he is like that to the non-devotees. For those who approach Krishna in an inimical mood, or those who simply desire to forget Krishna, Krishna reciprocates with them in a way which is not very pleasant. For instance, as time, by the passing of the years, he causes old age, disease, death, and rebirth. And for those demons who oppose Krishna, when Krishna personally comes to this world, then Krishna appears to them to be very unpleasant. The devotees are very anxious to see Krishna, his beautiful form, but to the non-devotees, because of their perverse perception, Krishna seems to be unpleasant. Krishna personally kills them. So, just like Kamsa, he was always thinking of Krishna. But he thought that Krishna is something very bad. Krishna will kill me. So to him, Krishna seemed very unpleasant. Of course, there are different meanings for every word, and another meaning of this name is Vyala, which means one who accepts his devotees. Again, by the principle of Yayata Amang Prapadyante Tangs Tathaiva Bhajami Aham, Krishna reciprocates with people according to the way they approach him. And the example given here is Vibhishana. Even though he came from the camp of the enemy, Rama accepted Vibhishana because his inclination was that to be of a devotee. So this is a very important point to understand. Krishna deals with us individually. We may be born in a family of devotees, but that doesn't mean that Krishna is obliged to accept us. Of course, some consideration may be there. But even his own son, Krishna, one of his sons, everyone is the son of Krishna, but the direct son of Krishna, via Bhumi Devi, became, his name was Naraka, which became known as Narakasura. And he was a demon, and Krishna killed him because he was causing disturbance in the world. So Krishna accepts the devotees, even if they come from a background which may seem unlikely that they are fit to be devotees. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Manghi Parthavya Pashritya, Yepi Syuf Papa Yoneha, Striyo Vaishas Tata Shudras, Tipiyanti Param Gatim. Krishna says that even persons who come from born in a sinful situation, they can attain this supreme destination. They can come to me if they take shelter in me. And Krishna gives the example of the woman, Vaishya, the merchant class, and Shudra, the lower laboring class. So by Vedic understanding, these three births are not as high as those of the kings or the brahmanas, the priestly class. But Krishna says that doesn't matter. If they have devotion for me, they are delivered. If they don't have devotion for me, they are not delivered. So Krishna, Vyala, he is like a dangerous serpent or a mad elephant that cannot be controlled for those who oppose him. And for those who approach him with love, he is most sweet and kind and accepts. Now, does that mean Krishna has favoritism? No, because he's ready to accept everyone. But if people choose not to, then Krishna reciprocates accordingly. Name 94, Pratyayaha, which means one who can be relied upon, one who can be trusted. It's very difficult to trust anyone in this world, especially in the modern age, increasingly so. People cannot trust even their own spouse or their own parents or their own children, who it would be expected that one could trust. But even if one does trust and has good grounds to trust someone in this world, you have a friend who you trust. Well, it's actually very dangerous. I mean, it's a very common thing that people trust their friend and then they cheat them. And in monetary matters, it happens all the time. But even if someone you trust intimately, they don't cheat you throughout their whole life, they act with full integrity, but still how much can you rely on any person? They can only help you to a limited extent. Even if you have full faith in someone, that faith, it won't help you in the ultimate sense, because no one can help us in the ultimate sense except Krishna. So this name, Pratyayaha, one who can be relied upon, that is a synonym in one sense, or it's similar to the word Sharana, which just came, who is the shelter. Because we may take shelter of other people, and they may even have a good intention to help us, but their ability to do so is limited. And even if someone can help us, it's only because whatever ability they have to help us, that comes from Krishna. That example is that Prahlad Maharaj gives. I quoted that. Balasya neha sharanam pitaro nrsimha. He prayed to Nrsimha Dev that parents, they try to protect their children, but they may not be able to. If the child gets some disease, then before their very eyes, with the child holding on to them and asking them to help them, asking them to help him, he may die. Or we may think, well, the parents can't help, but surely some medicine will. But not necessarily. If one is drowning in the ocean, you send a boat, but there's no guarantee. The boat may sink. You may not be able to get in the boat. Nartasya chagaramudanvati majjato no taptasya chat patibidhir yaihan jaseshtas tavad vibho tanubritang tvat upekshitanam. If Krishna doesn't help us, no one can help us. Even others who help us, they can only help us if Krishna desires so. So really the only person who can be fully relied on is Krishna, because only Krishna has the ability to fully help us. And also another important understanding is that what is the nature of being able to help others? There are many well-intentioned people in this world who want to help others. There are all kinds of welfare organizations which try to help people in various ways, and not only people, but also animals, and save the earth, go green, and all this kind of thing. So they have good intentions. But they don't know how to help others to the fullest extent. We may be very concerned to help others. Again, it's not within our ability to do so. Or we can only help in a very limited way. Just like Mother Teresa of Calcutta became famous for helping the poor in Calcutta. I was living or in and out of Calcutta during many of the years that she was there, and there were plenty more poor people than she was able to help. She was able to help a few. Her general policy was to pick up dying people from the street and take them to her home so that they lived on the street all their life, and then they'd die in her home, which wouldn't really help them that much. And if they got better, then they'd be back out on the street again. So it was a bit overhyped. But even if she was able to help people, it was in only a very, very few people. And even that help was only on the bodily platform. Because even if someone dies comfortably in a bed provided by Mother Teresa, they have to pass on to another life and suffer again. So the idea that we're helping people by providing them bodily comfort is a noble intention, no doubt. But we cannot actually help others unless we know how to help them. Another thing is that we don't individually have the ability to help others. So Krishna, he can help us. And if we direct others toward Krishna, then we can actually help them. Another meaning, another important meaning of pratyayaha. This is related with the word pratiti, which means clear understanding, clear apprehension, similar to the word pragya, or confidence. So this meaning, pratyayaha, clear apprehension, this is related to the next name, sarvadarshana, who is the personification of knowledge. So that name was there, aha, the day. Samvatsara, the year is measured in relation to the sun. So the sun is that who appears in the day, is the medium of clear vision, clear understanding. So clear understanding means that we can see everything properly and then understand how to act in a manner that is proper and beneficial. Without that clear understanding, we may have so many ideas, but they will all be incorrect. Just like there are so many ideas floating in the world. There used to be a word called philosophy before there was video games and all this kind of thing. There were a few people who were interested in philosophy. There were so many ideas floating around the world. But although there were so many ideas, people remained in ignorance. There was one idea that if we remove all classes of human beings and make them all one class by communism, then that will be the best thing for everyone. And it's such a good idea. People were convinced that it's such a good idea that it's worth killing those who are stopping this by holding the means, by owning the means of production. Let's kill all of them. It's worth doing that. And then that'll make the world a better place. But although it sounded good, it proved to be a failure. At the present time, in the name of, it's considered a worthy cause to invade countries and kill a lot of people in them for the sake of establishing democracy. Especially if there's a lot of oil in the country, that seems to make a lot of difference. They don't usually bother, especially if there's the oil and a dictator who doesn't cooperate with the countries who want them to have democracy. So this idea, democracy, we say everyone has to have democracy, and if you don't agree, then we'll bomb you into having a democratic government. So all these ideas that how we will improve the world, make it better, but without a clear understanding of the purpose of life, nothing works. So it's not worth. We shouldn't trust anyone unless they have a clear understanding of the purpose of life. Otherwise, they'll mislead us. So many people go for advice, psychological advice, counseling, and this and that. But unless people have a clear understanding of the purpose of life and the laws by which the universe works, and I'm not just talking about the physical laws, but the metaphysical laws, the laws of karma, by which we have to suffer for activities that are sinful, and even for activities that are apparently pious, even so-called good activities, they cause us to take birth again in this material world. So when one has clear knowledge, then one can understand what's going on in this world. Why is there suffering? How to get free from that suffering? What is the purpose of life? And one can act accordingly. So that clear understanding is given to those who want it by Krishna, who is the very personification of knowledge. Knowledge means to know Krishna. Vaidaischa sarva aham eva vedyaha. So Krishna is to be fully trusted. What he speaks in Bhagavad Gita, that is to be understood as the exposition of actual knowledge which is suitable for every person. So we should trust Krishna, not just because we're told to, but not just out of blind faith, but because Krishna is, he presents knowledge that if we act according to that knowledge, then our life, our whole existence, will be improved in the most, in the best possible manner. So Krishna is that person who can be relied upon. And those who follow Krishna, they can also be relied upon because they Another reason is because they have nothing to get from us. They don't desire. One who is full in himself. Krishna is full in himself. Atmavan, that name came. He's full in himself. He doesn't require anything from anyone. He doesn't interact with others for the sake of getting something from them, because he already owns everything anyway. He's fully satisfied in himself. Everyone in this world, when they deal with others, they expect something from them. And often in human dealings, either straightforwardly or more often subtly, people, they want something from us. People keep dogs. Why do they keep dogs and not salamanders? I guess some people keep salamanders. Some people keep alligators and snakes as pets. But the dog is the most popular pet. Why? Because the dog trusts you and licks you and looks at you with an affectionate look and wags his tail when you come past. So we get something from the dog. We get the feeling that we don't get from human beings, that someone likes me just for who or what I am. I just give him a bone every day or two and he becomes happy. So we keep the dog. Generally people like to keep dogs as pets rather than snakes, because the snake doesn't reciprocate in that way. Some people keep snakes as pets, but mostly not. So we want something from others, and often people make friendship with others just for the sake of cheating them, or because they have such a perverse disposition, they enter into a relationship with someone, and then they mistreat them, or because they're so self-centered that they can't treat people very nicely. They may take pleasure in needling others or giving pain to them. But Krishna isn't like that at all, because he has nothing to take from us. Krishna is complete in himself. He only wants to give to others, so we can fully trust him, because he's not going to cheat us. The next name, name 95, is Sarva Darshanaha. Darshan means seeing, and sarva means everything. So this name can be understood in various ways. He is all-seeing. Krishna sees everything. Sarvata parnipadam tat sarvato kshi shiro mukham. Shutimal sarvatam loke sarvam avritya tishtati. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes himself as, well, among the descriptions here is Sarvakshi. His eyes are everywhere. He covers everything. He sees everything. He's the all-seeing. He sees everything. So he sees all activities, and he also sees in our hearts what our intentions are. What do we actually want? Are we approaching him sincerely? Do we want to try and cheat Krishna? Krishna can see everything. Sarva Darshan also means that he shows everything. Of course, if he shows himself to someone, then they see everything, because he is everything. If you see Krishna, then you see everything. And then there's no need to see anything else, just like people are anxious to see different things. Therefore, they take great trouble to travel here and there to see the great Sphinx and to see the Eiffel Tower and to see the monuments in ancient Greece and all these different things. What do they see in Ljubljana? Anything to see here? The Hare Krishna temple. Is there anything else to see here? The river? No. Didn't make it yet on the great tourist stops of the... What? Ljubljana Castle. They have a castle. Okay. There's a cave. Okay.
I'm on lake.
There's a lake. Okay, folks. Put it on the tourist map. So you can go and see, go here and there. What have you seen? This idea that we will see different things, this thirst to see different things, is fully satisfied when we see Krishna. The example of that is, anyone? Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Dhruva Maharaj. Yeah, he saw Krishna. I said 10th canto. Yashoda, that's a good one. I was thinking of something else, actually. Yashoda, so yeah, that's a very good example. That she saw Krishna was accused of eating dirt. And he said, I didn't eat any dirt. And so he said, open your mouth. And then Yashoda saw within the mouth of Krishna all the dirt in the whole universe. All the earth, water, fire, air, ether, everything in the whole universe. So she saw everything. And she also saw herself looking within Krishna's mouth. But she didn't realize Krishna was everything. She thought, oh, that's a strange thing. Anyway, Krishna needs feeding, and she fed him. But Akrura, he had a vision of Krishna. When Akrura went to bathe in the Yamuna while taking Krishna away from Vrindavan, he had a vision of Krishna and Balaram, of being these young boys, of being surrounded by all different gods and praised with, and Akrura looked astonished, and Krishna said, oh, have you seen something wonderful? And Akrura said, well, when we've seen you, then what need is there to see anything else? Because you encompass everything. So when we see Krishna, there's no need of looking at anything. There are many examples also. Dhruva, like you said, he was very anxious to have a big kingdom. When he saw Vishnu, he thought, now I don't need anything else. Now I've seen Vishnu, I don't need anything else. In Srirangam, Ramanuja, this Dhanudas was completely absorbed in looking at the beautiful eyes of his wife. And Ramanuja brought him and said, I'll show you some better eyes. He said, no. There are no more beautiful eyes than my wife's eyes. So Ramanuja brought him to see the eyes of Ranganatha Swami. And so many people go for darshan daily, thousands of people. But by the grace of Ramanuja, this Dhanudas had such a vision that he thought, ah, now, yes, this is right. These eyes are worth seeing. So one who has seen Krishna has seen everything. And then there's no need to see anything else, because after all, Krishna is everything. And everything that be in existence without a relationship with Krishna, everything is useless. It's not really seeing. It's like seeing in black and white, or seeing in 2D. It's like something like having a photo of, when one is hungry, having a photo of a nice plate of food. So you can see it, but it doesn't satisfy one. But one who sees Krishna is fully satisfied in all respects. And when one sees Krishna, one can actually see everything in proper perspective. If we see things without, if we observe the world and presume it to be a place that is simply here, we don't know why it's here, but anyway, let's enjoy it. If we see it without a relationship with Krishna, that's not really seeing at all. When we see everything in relationship with Krishna, then we can understand what everything is. And then everything becomes joyful. Otherwise, without that, the whole world is simply dry, lacking in essence. Sarva Darshan, one who sees Krishna, will always see him. When one has seen Krishna, then he won't have any thought of seeing anything else. He will see Krishna everywhere. Yomam pashyati sarvatra sarvang chamai pashyati tasyaham na pranashyami sachame na pranashyati. Krishna says, for one who sees me everywhere and in everything, always. Yomam pashyati sarvam chamai pashyati, and sees everything as me. For such a person, Krishna says, I never lost to him and he has never lost to me. So such a person always sees Krishna. Tarva jangam deke na deke tar murti savatra hoi tar ishta deva svurti. A pure devotee sees this world, but he doesn't just see the forms of mobile and immobile entities, but he sees everywhere Krishna. Once when Srila Prabhupada was asked by a journalist, have you seen God? Srila Prabhupada said, well, will you accept what I say, my reply? How can you tell? I can say, but will you accept my reply? And the journalist said, I'll take your word, whatever you say. Prabhupada said, yes, I see him at every moment. So, Krishna is always manifest to the pure devotees. And for the non-devotees, even though they may even talk about God and go to interfaith meetings and discuss about this and that, but they can't see Krishna without the attitude of bhakti, of unmotivated surrender at his lotus feet. Darshan also means a philosophical system. One, as we understand from Bhagavad Gita, one has to understand Krishna. It's not just a matter of seeing him with our eyes. We have to understand him, who he is, what his glories are, to whatever extent that we can do. Many people who saw Krishna during his manifest presence in this world, or even persons today who see the form of Krishna in the temple, they may not see Krishna at all. They may see a statue. They don't see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or many people may have thought this is the son of Devaki and Vasudev, but they didn't realize his transcendental glories, and many were inimical to him. So they saw Krishna in one sense by the impression on the retina as transferred to the brain. In that sense, they had a sensual perception of Krishna, but they didn't really see Krishna, because real seeing means with understanding. Just like we might see an object, but unless we understand what it is, we see it in one sense, but without understanding its purpose, we don't understand it. It remains to us something that we only perceive, but because we don't know its purpose, we don't really know what it is at all. Just like, for instance, if we see a microwave oven, not much recommended, but such things exist. So we see a microwave oven, we see it. We just see it, but we don't know what it is or how to use it or what its purpose is. So we just see it, but it's no use to us if we don't know what its usage is, what its purpose is. So simply to see something visibly that is not full seeing. Full seeing is with knowledge. So darshan means a philosophical system. There are various philosophical systems in the world. And according to the philosophical system that we adhere to, we will see the world in a particular way. It may not even be a philosophical system as such. It may simply be a worldview or an outlook on life. An example is that different people may go to a forest and they see the same thing, but they have a different way of processing what they see. A businessman may go to a forest and think, well, if I purchase this land, I can cut down all the trees and sell it and make a good profit from selling the wood. Then I can sell the land for building plots. An ecologist may go to the forest and say, hey, we better get this protected before a businessman buys it and cuts down all the trees. A hunter may go and say, hey, this forest is good for shooting deer. A lusty person may go and say, this is a good place to bring my girlfriend. A camper, someone who likes the outdoor life. There are so many ways. Someone who's spiritually interested may think, this is a good place for me to sit and meditate. So different people, they see the same thing, but in a different way. So there are different philosophies of life by which we see the world. Different people see the world in a different way. Some people think that the whole world is simply a combination of atoms, random combination of atoms. Some people, they see that the world is set up in such a way that if we perform sacrifice, we can go to the heavenly planets. So they become very concerned with performing sacrifices. Some people see this world as simply an illusion. Some people see this world as the creation of Krishna, which we should therefore live within for the sake of serving Krishna. So according to our understanding, we relate with the world in various different ways. So to have a clear understanding of what is the actual reality, that helps us to see things in such a way that our life will be led in the best possible way. Just like if we see a microwave oven, but we don't know that it can be used for cooking food, then it's of no use to us whatsoever. We could use it for something else. We could store things in it, but it's not very efficient for storing things. We could use it for throwing at someone if we get angry. I'm just trying to think. How many things could you do with a microwave oven apart from microwaving food in it? So, there are various things we could do with it, but if we don't know its proper purpose, then we can't get the proper benefit from it. So if we don't know the actual philosophy of life, then we can't live in a very purposeful way in this world. Now, all these philosophies come from Krishna, directly or indirectly. Krishna says, Matasmriti Jnanam Apohanam Cha. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, illusion, everything comes from Krishna. So there are various complex philosophies in the world, and various people are inspired in various ways to make up various philosophies or to propagate or to adhere to various philosophies. The intelligence by which we forget Krishna also comes from Krishna. So all philosophies are ultimately meant to lead, they come from Krishna, they're all ultimately meant to lead to Krishna, but unless we have good fortune of coming in contact with someone who can, who is like the sun, who reflects the sunlight, who is Krishna, of clear knowledge, then the philosophy we adhere to will not actually help us. So he gives the intelligence by which we can understand him. Or he also gives the intelligence by which we cannot understand him. And it may seem, the various philosophies, they may seem just perfect. Communism, great idea. See, stop all this exploitation, make everyone equal. Sounds like a very good idea, but it didn't work. Democracy, again, give everyone an equal chance to be represented. But it doesn't work. It's not that everyone has an equal, although theoretically there are equal rights, but there are not. The understanding that Krishna gives is that there is hierarchy within human society. That will always be there. There will always be someone more intelligent, more learned, more powerful. The real problem is not that someone is in a superior position to another, but the problem is one of exploitation. The problem is one of material desire, which comes from not remembering Krishna or not wanting to serve Krishna. So all philosophies, all ideas come from Krishna. And the best idea, or the real idea, or the actual darshan. Darshan means philosophy. The darshan, the philosophy that encompasses all others, that supersedes all others, or surpasses all others. That is Krishna, to understand Krishna. So in this sense, he's also Sarva Darshan. To see him is to see everything, because he is everything. Nothing is different from Krishna. To perceive anything as being different from Krishna means to have faulty vision. So, is there any question about this? This, by discussing the thousand names of Vishnu, we can meditate on the various qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by which he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the actual subject of knowledge. Everything else we study in this world, without this subject, is all one big zero. So any question? Yes, please.
Sometimes when we read in our relationships between devotees, for me it's difficult to remain confidential, because sometimes if we put together stories, we can understand somebody better or approach better if we share some information, like personal information.
You're asking about confidentiality.
Yes.
What's the question, actually? Could you?
Relationships between devotees. No, if I talk to devotees, they want that I keep this for myself. But sometimes we share also some information with the purpose, with the motive to understand somebody better, to help him out from some crisis.
You mean you'd speak about someone, one devotee to another devotee? I'm not sure. Yeah. You share something confidential about one devotee with another devotee.
Yeah.
And? With a motive to help them. Yes. And?
I don't know if it's proper because I can understand that this devotee wants me to keep information.
I see. You know something confidential about one devotee, which is not supposed to be told to someone else, but you tell it to someone else anyway with the aim of helping them ultimately.
Yes.
Well, each case would have to be seen differently. You can't... If the ultimate aim is to help another, then it's always... the motive is a major factor. Breaking confidentiality with the motive to benefit others, that can be good. Just like if someone tells you, don't tell anyone, but I'm going to go out and shoot people dead in the streets today. It would be good not to keep the secret. Better go and tell the police. That's an extreme example, I guess. I don't. It's very difficult to say because humans to give an all-encompassing reply to this would probably not. It's not a good idea to do so because every situation is different. You have to judge each situation differently. That's why in Shastras there are so many narrations given of various situations and how various people reacted to them and the results of them doing so. But we find ourselves in various situations and it's often very difficult to know how to act. Because Shastra can't cover every situation. But in general, if we find ourselves in situations where people are confiding in us, as happens quite a lot with myself, being in the situation of designated spiritual guide, leader, guru, then it is advisable to have others who one can consult also. In such situations. Rather, if we're going to take a decision which is going to affect someone's life very deeply, it's good to discuss with others before making a move. That's a general statement. You discuss with others who we trust for their integrity, for their judgment, for their wisdom like this. So it's good to cultivate the association of such people. And generally those who have been practicing Krishna consciousness seriously, at least for some years, then they do develop qualities of integrity, insight, wisdom, a desire to help others. Another thing is that we also can understand that ultimately we can't help anyone. We can only point them in the right direction. So we can encourage people in whatever situation they may be to chant Hare Krishna, to apply themselves to the process of Krishna consciousness, which will ultimately help them. Because in whatever situation we may be, however desperate, demanding, or demoralizing as it may seem, it's temporary. Whatever's going on in our life, it will pass. Time will cause it to pass. So, whatever may be happening to us, around us, we have to keep in contact with Krishna and cultivating that understanding of Krishna, that motive of service to Krishna, that will carry us through all situations, however difficult they may be. So ultimately this, trying to help others this way, that way, the other way, we may do so, But ultimately, it is the practice and development of Krishna consciousness that's going to help us, not any psychological or social adjustments. Ultimately, Krishna consciousness is going to help. There may be also some various adjustments in this world, but the real adjustment is to adjust our consciousness so that we can see Krishna in everything. Anything else? Any other question? No. Yes, please.
Today we were speaking about names of Krishna, different names. Is there some name Krishna likes more than most?
Are there names which Krishna likes most? Yes. Krishna likes names that are in relation with his devotees, because he's very fond of his devotees. So there are many such names. Radharaman, there are so many. Radharaman, Radha Krishna, Radha Govinda, Radhanath, Radhapati. And there are other devotees also. Yashoda Nandana, Nanda Nandana. So Krishna likes such names. Krishna likes all his names. He has many names, and he likes all of his names. Krishna is by far the most egoistic person. However egoistic someone may be, he can't be even slightly as egoistic as Krishna. He set up the whole universe in such a way that everyone is simply meant to glorify him. And he has many names which glorify his various qualities. And there are even elaborate systems of worship for him. He asks everyone to fully surrender to him without any reservation. So Krishna is extremely self-centered, demanding, and egoistic. However, in Krishna, that is an admirable quality, because he is actually worth remembering about, hearing about, chanting, glorifying, worshipping. It works for us also. Whereas if we glorify some idiot who thinks they are greater than they actually are, that's the difference. An egoistic person of this world, they're trying to promote themselves as being better than they actually are. Whereas Krishna, however much he or we promote him, we can't actually touch. We can't come anywhere near to the limit of his glories. He is infinitely great, and we are infinitesimally insignificant. No, wait a minute. We are infinitesimal and insignificant. That's so to try to pump up our own name, fame, and glory is simply foolishness. But to glorify Krishna, that is most appropriate. And anyway, Krishna, he must be egoistic because there's nothing except him, so he can't think about anything else anyway. He's always thinking about himself. There's nothing exists except him, so what else is he going to think about? Only the Mayavadis, they want to cut out any thought of anything. And then they just become like ghosts. The result of thinking about Krishna is that he's everything, he's all bliss. So by thinking of Krishna, he becomes blissful, we become blissful. So all glories to Krishna's egoism. And no glories to anyone else who wants to promote themselves. Anyone except Krishna who wants to promote themselves is simply announcing to the world their own foolishness, that's all. It's simply an exercise in they're simply announcing. By as much as they promote themselves, they are simply exhibiting their foolishness. Yeah. So, you want to go ahead? What's coming up here? You can see.